Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standig Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standig. I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. Hope everyone is doing well. On this Monday, it's April 3rd, late night, and we're still waiting for ownership news to break. Wish I could tell you when something's going to happen, but we're not there yet. Soon? Seems like maybe we'll find out soon enough. Obviously, we'll continue to talk about that here and write about it on The Athletic. On this episode, though, we're going to do what we usually would do at this time of year, focus on the draft and doing that with us today. Bruce Feldman, college football insider for The Athletic, as well as Fox Sports. Nobody knows more about what's going on around the world of college football than Bruce, and he had a new mock draft out last week. It's an annual one he does. It's a really great one in which he speaks with the coaches and others with the teams that faced these players to get insight into what it was like to have to defend them or block against them or strategize or whatever it may be. Not to mention, what do they hear on the side about these guys? So a great mock draft to look at. And here we focused on not so much the players that Washington may or may not take at 16, but about the interesting situations that Bruce talked about that could affect Washington's options around 16, including Will Levis and Hendon Hooker. You know, are they going to be in position where Washington maybe hypothetically could take them or, you know, trade a pick, something like that? What about Bijan Robinson? Does he go before or after Washington? Jalen Carter, the cornerbacks, a really interesting conversation. I think you guys are going to enjoy that. We'll get to it all here in a moment on the podcast, which, of course, you can find on iTunes or anywhere you do your podcasting. As for The Athletic, new story up in the morning in which I asked the two people who speak to and about Dan Snyder the most, you know them as Ron Rivera and Jason Wright, about their times working with the owner and lessons learned during that experience and from Snyder himself. I think you guys will like some of what's in here as well. All right, so just a couple quick things before we get to Bruce. I mentioned somewhere the other day that there's a Snyder tax on Washington for the last however many years. It has prevented them from possibly getting certain players, and these high-profile quarterbacks in particular. If they have other options, they're not coming to Washington. We've talked about that. And then there's other just general limitations. Like, even if the NFL wanted to have a draft, hold the draft here in D.C., that's not going to happen with Dan Snyder owning the team. Maybe that happens now. But to that end, I think, from what I've heard, I think that Hard Knocks could, in fact, be an option for Washington. Now, it's an option just from the standpoint of that there are only four teams who are eligible to be chosen based on the criteria of how they do these things. Now, the four teams eligible are the Jets, the Bears, the Saints, and the Commanders. There is a formula for how all of this works, and basically, I believe the criteria for determining which teams are even eligible comes down to whether they have a first-year head coach, if they've previously appeared on Hard Knocks, and if they've been a playoff team in the last two seasons. I just named four teams that have been kind of fair to middling in recent years. I wouldn't say that Washington is necessarily the most interesting of those teams, especially if Aaron Rodgers does in fact go to the Jets. But the fact that Washington would be in the mix, I think for the first time, this is a year where I think it could actually happen. I did not get the sense that they were interested in this before, I think largely because of Snyder. But if Snyder is, assuming he is in fact gone and has sold the team, my sense is that people there would be down with Washington being on Hard Knocks. It would be an interesting experience, I would say, to watch it from the vantage point I would have of as a beat reporter. get a chance to see behind the scenes just like the rest of you that we wouldn't get to see otherwise. So could be interesting. It's a 1 in 4 chance, I guess. I don't know if you want to say each of these teams is equal, but, you know, obviously Washington would have some intrigue for sure in the post-Dan Snyder era. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a reasonable thought for sure. You know, obviously there's not that much going on the football side at the moment. And we'll have plenty more time, obviously, to break down the draft and remaining needs. But we've kind of gone through a bunch of that already. But I was on with Kevin Sheehan today on his new time slot, 10 to 1 in the morning on the Team 980. And I'm on with him every Monday and Friday. And he asked me, the exit question was, we were talking about Sam Howell. We were talking about Jacoby Brissett, the idea of, you know, Sam Howell being the projected starter. Is that going to hold? You know, what does Eric Bieniemy think about this? Since he wasn't around when this vision first got announced, et cetera. But ultimately, Kevin asked me, how many games do I think Sam Howell starts this year? It's a really interesting question because there are a ton of variables for sure. I mean, for starters, is he the starter for week one? You know, it seems like he's certainly going to have the opportunity to get there, but we will ultimately see if he hangs on and gets it or if they go with the presumably safer option in Jacoby Brissett. But if Howell starts and they start off slow yet again, does Rivera wait? I mean, maybe it's not Sam Howell's fault, but if they're 1-4, 2-3, does the coach, you know, does he feel he has time to wait and see, or does he have to go to Jacoby Brissett? On the flip side, if Jacoby Brissett ends up starting somehow, you know, what would it take for them to turn to Howell? Would a rough start put them in position to want to say, well, let's see what happens now with Howell? Does the new owner reflect on this? It's a tough call. It's not like we can sit here and definitively say Sam Howell is going to start all the games. You know, forget injuries. So that said, I went with sort of the middle. I went like 7.5 is where I kind of set the bar. I think I would go over, but I still remain that like the reason that they made the announcement about Howell as QB1 entering the summer in the first place is, as you've heard me say, that they were trying to change the subject from the poor finish of the year to something more positive. They definitely did that, and we'll see what Sam Howell can do. I do think he's an interesting player, but, you know, they're putting a lot on his plate for sure based on just one start as a guy who was a fifth-round pick just the year prior, even though he is interesting for sure. All right, like I said, don't have much, not a ton of notes here today, but we'll have more podcasts this week. We'll see what else we can come up with for sure. But right now, let's get to it. Really fun conversation. Bruce Feldman from Fox Sports at Bruce Feldman CFB on Twitter. Here we go. My conversation with Bruce Feldman talking the 2023 NFL Draft here on the Standard Room Only podcast. All right. As promised, joining me here on the podcast, very exciting to welcome in one of our college, well, I don't know if you're one of, but you're one of the go-to college football insiders out there, and he's dove into the NFL draft with all his sources. It's Bruce Feldman. Bruce, thanks for taking the time. I know it's busy for you, you know, checking things around.
Yeah, it's always a fun project for me to work on. I love the NFL, and just when I've always watched the draft process, I've been going to the combine for like 15 years, but whenever I've seen it, I was like, all right, I feel like I have a different perspective on it just because I'm talking to a lot of coaches, and the coaches have actually, you know, and I'm not, you know, there's plenty of good draft analysts, you know, starting with our own guy, Dane. But one thing I think that is maybe unique to look at it from this side is these are the coaches who not only scouted and watched these players on film, but then they've game planned against them and they know exactly what they are trying to do to them. So it's not like, well, I think this is supposed to be this or whatever. Like, they know. They also, you know, a lot of these coaches are in the same conference, so they know a lot about the players' backgrounds, what the coaches really think about them because they've had these conversations. So it's just a really – and also they know about the players that they have. And people who've, you know, looked at the mock already, they'll see some comments where some of their own coaches are pretty critical on their own guys because they know their own guys' shortcomings. And I think that's an interesting window into who's playing who.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And obviously, I encourage everybody to go check Bruce's mock draft out because, like he said, it's got a lot of insight in there from the people who are actually going against these players, from the coaches who are playing against these players in college. And you're right. When it comes to mock drafts, a lot of times it's people are making connections team to player based on kind of, well, the team needs X and I like this player, but no offense to a lot of mock draft people, myself included, who cares, right? I mean, ultimately it's the people in the who are really in the mix who know best what's going on. And that's why we get risers, fallers, busts, whatever, because, you know, it is a hard thing to figure out, but the people in the mix are going to have at least, if not a better feel, a much different feel, like you said, than those of us just watching tape or watching TV.
Yeah, and it's fascinating because, like, there are certain guys that I would hear about from some of these coaches because I would ask about specific guys and then go, anybody else you think is a kind of a first-round talent or somebody who really kind of really wowed you? And there will be a handful of guys, and I'm like, why is this guy? Nobody has him in the first two rounds, or why is, you know, some of that? And there was at least two or three guys that fit into that category where I'm like, all right, I suspect these guys may rise. And whether they rise or not, that's perception wise, because they may not, you know, it's just like there may be scouts and personnel people who've had these guys really high all along, but they're not showing their cards. And so, you know, there are certain guys like, why did this guy fall? Well, this guy may never really fallen. He may have been always evaluated there. You know, I go back to living in Los Angeles, like Matt Barkley, people talked about, oh, he was going to be the first pick in the draft. I'm not sure anybody thought who was a football, you know, real football personnel person thought this guy's going to be top 10 pick. You know, I don't know if they thought he's going to be a fourth or fifth round pick, but a lot of times what we get caught up in, you know, in terms of media hype may not be quite the reality. I mean, there is a handful of players. And like you said, I cover college football all year round who are like, oh, these players are definitely better. The coaches who play them think they're much better than we in the media realize.
You know, you mentioned, you know, being in LA. I always equate this to in 18 months from now in Hollywood, there will be somebody or somebody's fronting movies who will be coming like on the cover of magazines who none of us have heard of right now. That we have no idea who this person is, but they've already started to shoot the movies. They've already started to get some attention. And by the time the public catches up to it, they're already a thing. And people act like, oh, wow, where'd this come from? And it's like, well, actually, it's like the same thing. It's like, well, I've been studying this player for 2 years and I saw he should be top 20, even if you didn't think so, or the opposite. And that's in my head how I always sort of equate these things.
Yeah, one of my favorite parts of this, working on this, and I work on it for like 2 months, is other stories will come out of this, meaning I'll talk to coaches and something will spring out. And so 2 years ago, I remember, you know, Virginia Tech, Christian Darrisaw was a really highly regarded offensive tackle. And I was asking guys who were in the ACC about him, and what it kept on happening was, yeah, he's a good player. The guy who's we think is, you know, we thought was the best one by far is the NC State kid. And the first time I heard that, I was like, just kind of, you know, okay, whatever. But then after I got off the phone with that particular coach, I looked up and I was like, there's no NC State offensive tackle in this draft. And then I was trying, because they, you know, a lot of times you don't get the name of a guy. It may be the number or, you know,
right.
And now numbers change from year to year too. Yaya Diaby, an edge rush from Louisville, change numbers, you know, like, and so anyway, by the second time I talked to this, a coach in the ACC, you know, they mentioned the number and I'm like, oh, this must be the sophomore they're talking about. Well, it's Ike Ekwonu. And then it was like, all right, you know, I would ask them, all these coaches, you know, if I talked to six guys, then the last four, I specifically asked about Icky as well. And Icky turned out to be a really good story for me because he was not even first team all league. Nobody on the draft, like, I would tell guys I know who are in personnel, hey, take a look at this guy. Tell me what you think. Because they're not looking at sophomores, second year sophomores, especially offensive line. And he wasn't a big recruit coming out of high school. So nobody outside of like a bunch of coaches really knew anything about him. Well, he turned out to be the first offensive lineman taken, you know, last year. And this is like kind of what you just said about the movie, phenomenon. This is what he was. And then there's awesome tape of him. And, the more people, and there are guys like that every year. As much as people think there aren't people who fall through the cracks, there are still a bunch.
Yeah, for sure. So let's talk about a couple of these guys. And I was telling you before we started that, I definitely want to look at everybody. I want everybody to look at your mock, but I want to go through some of the stuff here as it pertains to Washington, not necessarily the players for Washington, but how the board may unfold in front of them and to agree behind them, how that could affect things if you're thinking about trading down or strengths of the drafts or things like that. You mentioned guys who their value is sort of still trying to maybe figure it out. I want to start with the quarterbacks, not the top three guys. We kind of, it does feel like in some order, CJ Stroud, Bryce Young, you have 1-2, and that does feel like sort of the consensus at this point, or at least leading that way, with Anthony Richardson going to the Colts at 4. The question then becomes like, what happens next? Where does Will Levis go? And then Hendon Hooker is gaining momentum here, which is interesting to me as a 25-year-old coming off an ACL surgery. These are things that don't seem like that would make sense for a first round pick, but now he is gaining momentum. You have him in the first round, and you also had Levis falling. So both of those guys would, in theory, be there for Washington, independent of Washington's needs. And we kind of think they're going with Howell and Brissett. Tell me about why you think, I guess, again, we don't know if they're technically falling, but why Levis appears to be falling and why Hooker appears to be rising.
So it's interesting because both guys are transfer quarterbacks. Now that's not uncommon these days, but in Will Levis's case, very impressive 2021 film when he had a much better offensive line and when he had Wan'Dale Robinson, who was a dynamic slot for them, but also Liam Cohen was the offensive coordinator. At the end of the season, Liam Cohen goes back to the NFL to take an OC job with the Rams. They bring in another NFL guy, Rich Scangarello. The offensive line lose a bunch of good players. And, talking to the coaches who faded, they were like, Scangarello was entirely predictable. The system was a mishmash. It was just not, and what they thought was because of, O-line issues also, and the just not as good of a system fit. That I heard, one of the things was Will Levis is seeing ghosts now, and he has a powerful arm. He can run, but I think there is some concern about, there's a little more skepticism there in terms of he just wasn't the same guy. Now, one of the coaches I talked to said, look, we've seen him do it. I saw what he was in 2021. It was just last year, I think there was hesitation, but I think there is a little bit of concerns of accuracy. Can he takes, does he, can he make all the throws in terms of, can he, do, is everything going to be a rocket out of his hand? Hendon Hooker on the other side, people, I,
Can I
yeah, I'm sorry.
pause you there for a quick second? As I'm listening to you describe the Will Levis thing, it reminds me a lot of the Sam Howell story, because this is the pitch that Washington's trying to go with right now, that Howell had a really good sophomore year, then they lost 1,000 players on this on staff, and then everything kind of went down. He slides all the way to the fifth. I mean, even Washington touting him, saying how much they liked him. I'm like, sure, you still waited till the fifth round to take him. It sort of reminds me almost a little bit of that, in a sense, because and that will be interesting with Levis. Like, how much did losing all these the coach and these other pieces affect what he did the next year?
I think the one thing that bodes well for him is, when he got to Kentucky, he missed spring because he got there late. He was still at Penn State. So he didn't even have a spring to acclimate with his teammates and Liam Cohen, the new play caller there. And he did a really good job in 2021. It was just 2022, the hype train got out of control, the supporting cast wasn't as good, and he struggled, So I think there's definitely a lot of talent there, but we've seen quarterbacks who have really big arms, maybe accuracy concerns, like Josh Allen, and this came up in in the mock draft, from some personnel people, was especially in regards to more Anthony Richardson. All right, the mid 50s completion percentage, the powerful arm. Now, Josh Allen played at a lesser competition level than Anthony Richardson, but had more of a body of work. But again, where it's like, okay, you know, you talk to coaches who are like, well, Will Levis can run. There's certain things you can do. We saw that with Daniel Jones, right? Brian Daboll has done a really good job with quarterbacks by showcasing what they can do and not asking them too much about what they may not be able to do very well.
Right.
Right. And so I think whether it's Anthony Richardson or Will Levis, you see that. What I think there is a concern though, is like, ultimately, you know, how well does he see it? You know, I think there's no concern about how well he sees it from the CJ Stroud side, you know, from the people I've talked to. And the concern obviously with Bryce is the physical size, you know, just will he hold up? You know, he is smaller, but, you know, really smart and everything. When you get to Will Levis and Anthony Richardson, there is some concern about how well do they process, how well do they see it? And I think that is the question mark. I mean, the Hendon Hooker brings, to me, the biggest question mark is how does he transition from the system that they run at Tennessee? Now, he came from Virginia Tech, very different system. The coaches I talked to in the NFL who met with him when I was in Indy, they said they were really impressed by him. He had great, not just recall, but understanding what they did at Virginia Tech. And I think what's come up a lot is you have a bunch of quarterbacks now who have had two systems because there are so many more transfer quarterbacks out there. And so I think when coaches in the NFL dig back into like, hey, what did you know about this? It's an interesting tell for them. Obviously, his age is not a plus, you know, at 25. I also think that is going to be a huge knock for him because it's not like he's 29, right? We're seeing plenty of quarterbacks have a lot of success when they're, you know, into their 30s. So I don't know if you're worried about what's he going to be like at 29. I think the question is how good can he be, you know, when he, you know, in 2024, right? He's going to probably miss a big chunk of this season, but I thought for the Vikings, he's an ideal spot because then all of a sudden you still have Kirk Cousins there. I'm not saying you want to sit him on the bench at that age for 3 years, but at the same time, you know, whether it's the Titans, you know, who have Tannehill, but he's a free agent after a year from now. And he's also now at 35, he's had some injury issues and maybe he's starting to decline. So I could see, you know, guys there being, okay, that might be a good fit for those guys. But like the Hendon Hooker love, as it came up, you know, with a lot of coaches I talked to, really, I don't want to say it caught me off guard because the stuff I heard at the combine was very positive. The coaches really kind of gushed about him much more than I expected. Now, he had a great year on the field and he helped turn that program around because Tennessee football had been in the ditch for like the last 15 years. But to the degree these coaches were that impressed by him kind of took me back a minute.
Yeah, he's going to be the interesting one for me in terms of the hype versus the reality. I mean, he obviously had a tremendous year, and if he doesn't get hurt, we may, you know, he may very well be being discussed in the first round all along, but at the same point, there's always these, you know, some players that get talked up a bit. And then you come to find, you know, look, even last year, this maybe isn't the exact same thing, but like Malik Willis is being discussed as a top five pick. And then he goes all the way to the third round. I don't imagine, scouts, like we're saying, had such a 180 on the kid over the last couple months before the draft. It was probably just an overhype to some degree, but that's, you know, but it can go in the other way as well in terms of undervaluing a player. So I think that's going to be an interesting one to see for Washington. Because
the other thing too, Ben, I would just bring this up, just when I looked at, once you start getting into the 20s, there's not a lot of teams that need quarterbacks.
Right.
Now, the Bengals are not taking a quarterback. The Chiefs are, you know, you start going through the Eagles are not taking a quarterback high. Now, maybe somebody would jump back in, but I don't know how many teams, and certainly Washington would fit in this category, but how many teams badly really need a quarterback that they would burn a top 40 pick on it? I don't know. I don't think it's as many as we normally see.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. And this is not to derail us here, but part of like the Lamar Jackson conversation is, well, how many teams are actually in need of a quarterback, either because they don't have a stud already, or they haven't recently invested in someone.
Right. If you're the yeah, if you're the Falcons and you just spent a number two on Desmond Ridder, like, do you say, all right, it'd be different if you had a top four pick or if you have the choice between CJ or Bryce, maybe. But the idea that we're gonna jump back in the draft, I don't think you're taking Will Levis eight, you know, if you're the Falcons when you have other needs, especially on, you know, on defense still. But if you are, I just don't know what, like, even if you're Washington, do you ride and say, all right, we like Sam Howell. I don't know if we love him, but we were encouraged by some of the stuff. Do you give him a chance as opposed to say, hey, we're going to bring in somebody else? I don't know. I could be wrong. I don't know if they're looking at Will Levis going, yeah, we're totally sold on him, to say we're going to, you know, when we have some other needs and there's some really good cornerbacks out there that I think will be available at that spot that we can get.
Right. To me, a guy like Levis or Hooker, he were to continue to rise, would be trade options for them. Like, you know, could you entice the Vikings to jump from 23 to 16, or, you know, you had a team from the second round moving up, or whatever it might be. So, yeah, I think that to me is where it'd be more for Washington's sake. But it's interesting to see, like, you know, if Levis even is there, that does change the board for a team like that. And Hooker, same thing. If he truly is rising up and people think he's worthy, then people will do crazy stuff for quarterbacks. So it does give them another option. Basically a different guy. This is a guy that absolutely Washington is not going to take, but I have no idea where he's going to go in this draft. And that's Jalen Carter, the defensive tackle from Georgia, who obviously, you know, for people who don't know quite know, he was being projected as arguably the number one pick in the entire draft. Then he had the revelation of off the field incident that resulted in a car crash and the loss of life. He was tangentially involved in, I guess. Anyway, we still don't quite know exactly, I guess, the fallout from that and what else. Other things may have been uncovered as people do background checks. What's your sense of Jalen Carter? Because I've heard a mixed bag of where he could go. Mock drafts seem to continue to put him high up. But what's your view on him? Because obviously if he goes ahead of or Washington picks, that's good. If he falls, then obviously that, you know, changes the board a bit.
I think unless there is more, you know, and I don't want to minimize, because two people died in the Georgia football program, died in those, in that car wreck.
Right.
But if there's, you know, I don't, you know, right now it's a misdemeanor, and in terms of legally, you know, in his involvement, so I don't know, you know, is there going to be a lot more to it that comes out eventually? I don't know that. I don't think anybody knows that right now. If it doesn't, I don't think he goes past, I don't think he falls out of the top five. And here's why. You know, we've seen time and time and time again, the NFL, somebody always takes talent. And here's the reality when it comes to what people see on film. In 2021, Georgia had as talented a defense as college football has seen probably in the last 20 years. They had three first-round picks in the D-line, including the first pick overall. Not one, but many of the coaches I've talked to think Jalen Carter was the most gifted player on that defense. Like, he is a wow guy in terms of what he brings to the table.
I mean,
he is the most gifted player in this draft. Now, is he going to go hard all the time? I mean, you don't get that with D linemen. And if he is engaged and feels like he has something to prove, which, you know, hopefully for his sake and the team that drafts him, he feels that way. You know, the stuff people saw at Georgia was jaw dropping, you know, freakish stuff in terms of how explosive an athlete he is at that size. But then again, he wasn't playing 40, 50, 60 snaps a game because they had such a depth of, you know, talent. If he goes five to the Seahawks, I think Pete Carroll would be an interesting, you know, coach for him. I could see him being a dominant force. You're talking about a franchise that, you know, one of the best players they ever had was Cortez Kennedy. I think, you know, there's some comparisons to Jalen Carter to Warren Sapp, because they're from the same high school. They both were tight ends really more in high school before they were really defensive linemen. They both definitely have baggage when they come into the NFL. But, you know, again, I mean, he has kind of Cortez Kennedy kind of talent. The question is, you what are you getting with him? And it's like going to be a fascinating process to watch unfold.
Yeah, I keep thinking it would be fascinating if somehow he did get past the top five. The Bears are sitting there at nine. They could have conceivably taken him at one if they had stayed there, or if his Carter's situation had unfolded the way that it did. To get him at nine, hypothetically, this would be like the greatest win-win trade, almost like I can remember. But that's a whole other topic for another day. Let me ask you two more questions before I let you go, and I appreciate the time. Bijan Robinson. Again, not another player that's not logically in play for Washington based on what they have, but he's a guy that, like, in terms of pure talent, might be a top five player in this draft. From a positional value, people don't like spending on running backs anymore, so he could be all over the place. You have him going 10 to the Eagles. I kind of think this actually makes a lot of sense because while we talk about running backs not being great value, the Eagles are in the Super Bowl window right now. And if this guy is as talented as people are saying, he could contribute immediately, unlike the majority of the first round picks who will be slow to develop just because of the transition. I kind of think with, especially with two first round picks with Philly and what they lose Miles Sanders, they bring in Rashad Penny, who's good, but he's always hurt. I think this is a pretty interesting pick. So I'm curious on why you had him going to Philly.
Yeah, I knew I was going to get blowback because it's a running back going top 10. I mean, if people, when they read the comments, how people talk about Bijan, it is different. I would say there's probably five or six players in this draft who were immensely respected by the guys that they faced, by the coaches they faced. Bijan is near the top, if not at the top of the list. And the question I had, and I had a buddy of mine who it works in the media, and he said, and this person's a Bears, grew up a Bears fan. He goes, I just hope the Bears do not, go up and try to get, enamored by Bijan. And I said, what if Bijan was like Marshall Faulk or Edgerrin James? And he's obviously much bigger than Marshall Faulk, but in terms of, like, I don't know if he's that elite caliber receiver. But that's kind of the buzz that you get from the coaches who saw him in college. And it's like, if he's Edgerrin James, granted, it's a different time, but like, if that's what you get, you should take him in the top 10. Like, the question is obviously the injury risk. Like, Saquon was really good last year, but he was really banged up the year before that. And the shelf life isn't great. But like you said, they are so close to winning a Super Bowl. If this is the next piece that helps Jalen, but it also helps AJ Brown. It helps, like, you have so much skill talent already. Like, they are built to win now. If you're saying, all right, we're going to take another edge guy because Brandon Graham is 30 whatever years old, and they're older, and say, hey, we're going to slot up maybe Nolan Smith, or like, I also think the edge guys, like, I don't think it's as great a class in terms of like top 15 guys. There's guys like they could take somebody who can really help them maybe around later, who's more of a developmental guy. Like, the guy I mentioned from Louisville, Yaya Diaby, he could be a, I think he can be a really high level NFL player. And I don't see anybody putting him in the first round. There will be some guys like that, out of the first round. But if I'm the Eagles and I'm so close and this guy is as good as the coaches think he is, I think you do got to give them some consideration.
Yeah, I mean, you never know what's going to happen in this league tomorrow, the next year. Things change all the time. So if you have that shot, plus the NFC is, down right now. So getting any extra lift would be a good thing. Last question. This is a position pertinent to Washington's needs, and that's cornerback. The question on some level is, when do they start going off the board? Some people have had Christian Gonzalez as the first corner going six to the Lions, Devin Witherspoon then comes soon after, then Joey Porter, and then there's a lot of other guys going to get picked maybe even in the first round. You have them going back a little bit later, coming off the board. And I'm just curious, what's your read on the cornerbacks, both in terms of like when you think they start going off, and also just how deep the position is in terms of a team like Washington feeling like maybe I don't even have to reach at 16 because there's still really good talent later on.
Yeah, I think this is one of the best, deepest positions in the draft. And, like, I think the coaches I talk to don't like some do, but there wasn't as much consensus on Christian Gonzalez as you know, his measurables are terrific. I think there's some good film. There's some like, depends who you talk to. You know, I remember I was at the, I was when I was in Indy, there's a DB coach I know pretty well. He goes, I don't feel that comfortable. I don't know if he could play in our division because we have some really physical running backs. And I was like, you know, obviously he's big. He's almost, it's not almost 20 pounds. He's 15 pounds bigger than Devin Witherspoon. But the coaches you talk, you know, you hear from are like, it's almost like Devin Witherspoon is built like Patrick Peterson. I mean, he's not. He's not even 6 feet and he's 180, low 180s, but he was super physical and instinctive. And I think that's the stuff that people really like. Then, you know, the person I, you know, the other persons out there is Joey Porter Jr., who's got great length, cleaned up his technique a lot in 2022. I think, you know, there's a lot of good, you know, good feelings about him. Once you start getting in the second round, though, there's a guy I would mention. And I, you know, I have him going and like I, because there's a handful of teams that didn't have first round picks, I included them in the mock draft at the bottom. And Julius Brents at K-State is, you know, he is another wow athlete. You know, he didn't run a great 40 time, but he is 6'3", 200 pounds. He was very, very physical this year at K-State. Coaches were wowed by how much he improved in his time there. His shuttle times are better than any DB in the draft. And like I said, he's got great length, great size. If you see him in the second round, you get Julius Brents. I think if I was a fan of that team, I'd be pretty pumped up.
Yeah, as somebody who went to the Senior Bowl and the Combine, Julius Brents is one of those guys that has stood out. He's just every in each stop, it's been like, oh, that guy. Yeah, pretty impressive. Then it just keeps going. And so like I've
I'm
been.
surprised, Ben. I'm surprised that nobody, and like I look at a lot of mock drafts, especially when I was about to publish. I'm surprised nobody has Julius Brents. Some don't even have him in the first, you know, first 2 rounds. And I was like, from the coaches, what they think of him, to me, like I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up, you know, his stock, whatever you want to say, you know, vaults into somewhere into the top 40.
Yeah, I did a Washington only mock, I don't know, a month or so ago, and I did a trade and a trade down, so I got them an extra second round pick, and I took him with one of the second round picks, for a lot of the reasons you said, in terms of the athleticism and the improvement. But yeah, but I think in general, it does seem like it's a pretty deep class, and if Washington doesn't feel they have to take one at 16, it might make sense to not, especially if there's an offensive lineman that they like. Or like the one of those quarterbacks that's there, they can make a trade down or something like that. Bruce, I really appreciate the time. I know you've got a lot going on, for sure. At Bruce Feldman CFB on Twitter, for however long all of us are still on Twitter. Bruce, thanks so much for the time and everybody. I encourage everyone to go check out your mock draft as well. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Ben. Always a pleasure. Take care.